Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope.
Brett, we are here for episode number 17. And, you know, it's interesting. You go to speakers meetings, or even sometimes newcomer meetings when somebody shares. They like to talk about a drunk log, and they tell about, you know, different stories in their AA career. And I was reading,
and proud about them.
Oh, yeah. I was reading this one thing where people are exchanging, like, drunk log stories. And this one guy says, yeah, he was in a bar in Japan where they bring you warm sake and they massage your shoulders while you drink as much as you want.
My.
Yeah. And so, another guy says, well, that's nothing. I was at a hotel in Mumbai where you buy one whiskey and they refill your glass twice more, all while there are pretty girls dancing.
Say what?
Yeah. And a third guy says, there's a bar in Dublin where as soon as they find out you're a foreigner, they pay for all your drinks. And then after you're tipsy, they invite you into the back room where you get naked and have sex all night with the staff. Yeah. And that's everybody's like, no way. Did that actually happen to you? And he says, well, it didn't happen to me, but it happened to my sister.
Oh, my goodness. We're pulling out the zingers today.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man.
A-A
humor. I hope none of this happened to any of you, by the way.
No. That was just, that's an interesting take on a joke because it really tells the difference between the way things happen in a man's mind
and in
a woman's mind, right?
Well, not only that, what happens in reality to what we think drinking is all about,
yeah.
All the wonderful pleasures it brings upon
pleasures.
Us.
Pleasures.
Yeah.
Yes, Clarice.
Yeah, I think for me, alcohol was that gorilla in the room with me that had a very loving eye, and, well, things didn't get done until the gorilla was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, until the gorilla was fed, so to speak.
Ew.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're this is where we go.
Yeah.
Yep. Geez, I don't even know how to segue into my little topic here, but we're gonna go for it anyways because I'm still hung up on the potential for drinking in Dublin. But anyways, coming in here, I knew I had work to do after denial and all those things.
After the smoke clears.
Yes, exactly. I knew that I had some work to do. And our very, very good friend, Bill W., always reminds us that half measures availed us nothing. And what does that mean, Mark?
I can speak from experience because when I first came into the rooms, I practiced self-measures over and over and over. One of them was in dealing with people, places, and things.
Yeah.
And my sponsor was quite clear about this, that the people, places, and things that were part of your drinking have to go. And I had probably 7 days without a drink, and my friends from the bar called and said, hey, we're all going to this place. You should meet us out. We haven't seen you in a couple of days. And I said, well, I'm not drinking anymore. And they were like, oh, that's good. That's great, man.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Just come out and drink soda.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a great idea. Yeah, because I don't drink anymore. I got to the bar, I ordered a soda, and I shit you not, with under 60 seconds, it was just me and the booze.
Isn't that crazy?
And I lost, and I knew it. And I ordered a drink, and I continued, and I got drunk. Came back the next day, raised my hand. Everybody said the same thing. People, places, and things. You can't go to bars. You have no, don't belong where you don't belong.
Right.
That's what
they
said.
Like they say, if you hang out in a barbershop long enough, you get a haircut.
Yup. And I think that's true of a lot of people that come in. They get a little bit of AA and they think they're good because they're so impressed with themselves. I was.
And that was enough?
It was enough, and it was enough to get me drunk.
Yeah.
And so those half measures can involve things like not getting a sponsor or getting a sponsor and just never calling them, never utilizing them.
Yeah, I was definitely guilty of that.
Half measuring your meetings, you know, either you, you know, show up at the very start and leave as soon as it's over. Don't get anything from before or after, or you don't make any kind of connections with other people in AA,
right.
Which is
no service.
Imperative. Yep. No service, no home group. And there's a lot of people that fly like that. And you know what? A few do get sober, but the vast majority do not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people, when you walk in the room the first day, they'll tell you the recipe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but
absolutely.
I mean, if you leave out the baking powder,
right,
you know, it's not going to come out right.
Or if we, just like we do, try and alter the recipe to make it better, even
then, make it easier to make.
Even then, it doesn't work. We have to give literally 100% to our recovery.
Stick to the plan.
Yeah, that is the one thing. And you know, it may not be perfect, but we have to be willing to give that 100%.
Right? And I know somebody that stuck to the plan. Eventually, her name is Vicky, and she's going to be our guest today.
Oh,
and I can't
about
wait
that.
To hear from her. Yeah.
You know, she is a great cheerleader. I've seen her out and about. You know, I know that we've talked about your band, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember every single time I was there and she was there, she was out there dancing her fool heart out.
She came up on stage, played the tambourine with us.
That's fantastic.
And she, you know, the thing about Vicky is she shares happiness and joy.
Right.
Yeah, she's always got a smile for you.
And it sounds like she's followed the, you know, followed
she's
the
followed
program.
The plan. So without further delay, let's welcome our guest, Vicky.
Vicky.
All right, Vicky, welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yes, thanks for coming out for this. And we are going to start with your sobriety date.
Okay, so my sobriety date is July 19th, 1988. And I have to also let you know that I got sober when I was 9.
I was wondering.
Boy, you're pretty young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Just kidding. For those people that know me, I wasn't really 9.
I've never been 9 in my life. So let's start at the beginning. Do you remember your first experience with alcohol?
Well, not really, because I think my first experience with alcohol was actually later than my first experience with pot, because that was my thing. I grew up in Brooklyn. I'm the middle of three sisters, and my childhood was seemingly normal. You know, I had a mom and dad, and they didn't drink, and my grandparents didn't drink, and, you know, we had lots of family around, and the neighborhood that I grew up in was predominantly Jewish, but my family was anti-God. And I'll talk about that later, I guess.
Sure.
And I didn't think I had like an unhappy childhood. It was okay. You know, we had sibling rivalry, the normal
stuff.
Right, but
it seemed pretty run-of-the-mill, pretty normal,
right? Sure, yeah. And then I got to, I don't know, junior high school. And there was also a neighborhood Y that I hung out a lot with. And the people there were my buddies. And it was mostly like during the summer that I hung around with these people a lot. Mm-hmm. And these were all, you know, people my age. Some of them were in my schools and some of them were neighborhood people. And we started smoking pot. And I don't remember how that happened.
Right, it was just around.
Just popped up.
The thing to do.
Yeah. And I don't know, we were probably like 13, 14, something
right.
like
and
that.
And it was just, hey, you want to smoke pot? Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
And we used to go to the person's house or apartment who had no parents there at the time.
Right.
You know, and we had the lava light going. And
awesome Pink Floyd going. Groovy,
man. Yeah.
And then we had like make-out parties or whatever, but
nice.
Whatever.
Can we spend some time on that?
Yeah. So at some point, does alcohol enter the scene?
I guess. See, this
So it wasn't really that remarkable, right, for
you?
No,
well, not yet.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, in the beginning, I honestly don't remember drinking. Hmm. I remember just doing a lot of pot. And recently, you know how Facebook reconnects you with, like, people from, like, our age or so? We haven't seen people for years and years and years. Well, this guy popped up from that group. And he was a good friend of mine, and he started sending me these photos of us in groups.
Nice.
And
wow.
then there's like one of our friends like holding a big bottle of Jack Daniels. So I go, oh, my God, maybe I was drinking in those days. I honestly don't remember.
It just didn't seem like a big deal probably because everybody was doing it.
Yeah.
It was a rite
of
passage.
You know, that's not as available as booze. So it's like, ooh, cool. You know, that's weed.
I don't know. And I feel like maybe some in the group liked booze better than pot.
Maybe.
And then vice versa, you know, whatever. So, I mean, that went on through junior high school. I had a really good friend of mine. Who had an older cousin who was a musician, and he would get us some good pot.
All those musicians.
Yes. And
I know this.
And we would sit in her apartment. You know, of course, her mom wasn't home or anything. We'd sit in her bedroom, and we would play the Allman Brothers live at the Fillmore East on a cassette tape. And for the kids that don't know what cassette tapes are, they're really old.
We won't even talk about 8-tracks.
No.
Yeah.
All I know is I remember about cassette tapes is having to have the pencil
to rewind it when
it spilled it. See, bringing you back more.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So my family really didn't have money, but this girl did, and she would tape me these tapes, you know, like bootleg tapes back in the day. So she, you know, whatever. But I digress.
So you're living the life of a normal teenager growing up in New York, and everything's cool.
And then I go to high school.
Okay.
And high school, I mean, it was fine. The high school was very big. There were kids coming from everywhere going to this Brooklyn high school. And I started gravitating towards the people like me. So how do I know these other people are smoking pot? I don't know. It's just like this feeling that you get.
Yeah.
So I'm gravitating towards these kids, but I never felt, I don't know, like I never felt like I was a popular kid. And, you know, I always felt like not as good as whatever was going on. And I was fine, but in my own mind, I just didn't have, like, self-confidence.
Right. Sounds like the seeds of alcoholism.
You think?
Yeah, I do. It's a very familiar-sounding story.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, going through life, and I'm always, like, feeling, like, envious or, I don't know. Like, I just wasn't part of the
less
popular.
Less than, more than.
I wasn't part of the popular crowd. And we lived in this house in this area called Manhattan Beach. This is way back after we moved out of Brighton Beach, but it was only one neighborhood over. But it made a really big difference because all those people like came from a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
And our house, I had this really cool bedroom. I was like upstairs in our house in the back room, but I had three windows, you know, on three of the walls. And it was sort of a private little bedroom, you know, so I'd like smoke pot and blow it out the window, whatever.
Good cross ventilation.
Yeah. Oh, that was important.
Oh, very important.
Yeah. I know. Right. Or in the winter, I would go out and quote unquote mail a letter, you know.
I got to go mail a letter. I'll be back in a couple days.
Hey, you know, I got to tell you, the way I grew up, I manipulated my parents into thinking like I was the best out of the three sisters in like because I'd be helpful around the house. I would be cleaning. I would
and
help
like
to
like the
cook.
Whole time you're thinking, how can I affect what they think of me?
Well, yeah.
Right?
Subconsciously,
sure.
That's what I was doing. So they always thought of me as this thing. I don't know. I think it's a Yiddish word meaning like a great, I don't know, like maybe a good wife or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They call me a balabusta. I don't know.
Yeah, balabusta.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know why I did an Italian.
I was going to say, that doesn't fit.
Yeah, balabusta.
It's close.
Better? Yeah, okay.
I don't know. So, You know, so my parents always trusted me. That's a thing.
Oh, nice.
And
earned the trust.
So I never had, you know, worry to be like caught in anything because I knew they never would catch me. Mm-hmm. You know, plus I was a good liar.
Yeah.
You know, in those days.
In those days, not anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
So at some point, does alcohol become a bigger part of your life?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So, you know, I'm going through high school. And my last, I guess my last summer of high school, I said, I don't want no more of this camp counselor bullshit. I'm going to get a real job. So for the summer, it was so stupid, this job. I became a charge card, what do you call those people? That solicitor, like a charge card solicitor, because they didn't have Visa or MasterCard in those days. Gimbel's had their own charge card. So at Gimbel's department store, which is no longer,
right.
It was on 34th Street in Manhattan. I was a charge girl.
So did you try to get people to sign up for the card?
Yes.
And if you
yes.
did you get like a spiff off that?
Yeah, I got a dollar.
Did you?
That's pretty good.
Did
then.
You do well?
No. It was horrible.
Did you do well though or no?
No, I didn't do well. I mean, how much money are you going to make?
So you're going from Manhattan Beach, you're going into the city.
Yeah,
you're going into Manhattan.
The city.
You're working at Gimbel's, you're making a couple dollars here and there, and it just sucks.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that bad because I was still in high school, you know?
Yeah.
So who do I meet? My soon-to-be ex-husband, okay? Because he's working in Gimbel's as an assistant buyer. And this guy's like, yes. And he was wearing a three-piece banana suit.
What the hell's a banana suit?
Banana colored suit.
Oh, like a yellow?
He wasn't like...
Did he by chance wear a big hat and have a monkey?
No, he was wearing like a banana costume.
Picture is this guy wearing a banana hammock?
Right. That's where I first went.
At Gimbel's. I'm a buyer. Yeah?
Oh, my God.
Banana colored.
So you meet this guy and you walk up to him and you say, I'm really attracted to you. Maybe someday you can be my ex-husband.
It didn't start like that. That wasn't my opening. Would you like to open a Gimbel's charge?
Yeah, right. Of course.
Can I just say for the listener, Vicky is wearing a banana colored sweater right now.
No, this
it's
is
more,
brighter.
It's more mustard.
I'm going more mustard.
Yeah, this is more like
a French's mustard.
Pretty absurd,
not a Gouldens, So anyway, you're at Gimbel's, you meet this guy.
Yeah, so of course he opens up a charge card, but he, unbeknownst to me, he already had one.
Oh.
You know, but he just thought I was cute and whatever, you know,
that's
and I
end.
Was smitten, you know.
Yeah.
So the rest is history at that point, you know, so we started going out and then like shortly after I'd like basically not officially, but I moved in with him in Queens and you know, out of my parents' house. And they were fine because they trusted me.
How old were you at this time?
How old was I?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was before college. Yeah.
Oh, so you're in the in-between 18,
19.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like the whole time, instead of going home, I go to his house. I wasn't really living with him, but I was sort of staying over a lot.
Yeah.
And the only rules that I had was, Vicky, we need to know where you are. So give us a phone call.
Wow.
You cool.
broke into that New York accent.
Did.
Like
that's my mother.
Fantastic.
That's my mother talking. Yeah. So,
but they did trust you because you had built yourself up in a certain way, right?
Right, yeah. Right. So with this guy, there was drinking, there was smoking, and now there was new things being introduced into my menagerie of drugs.
Mm.
You know, so... what I really liked were like, you know, black beauties and those kind of things.
Speed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point, I was actually a dance major in Brooklyn College.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
All
right, look
at you. I was a dance major. And the only reason why I was a dance major is because I didn't know what else to do. And I thought, well, I sort of know how to dance. So let me audition and get in, you know. And that was, I had no plan B. That was it. If I didn't get in, I didn't even think, you know, what if I don't get in? And the other stuff, like nobody was counseling me or advising me or any of that crap. It was so ridiculous the way I got there.
Yeah, just finding your own way.
Yeah. And Brooklyn College, you know, it was a commuter school, so I could take the bus, I could take the train, you know, that kind of thing. Because I didn't have a vehicle, because you don't need a vehicle in New York. So, you know, so I'm staying with this guy, and then we decide we're going to move in together. So we found a place in Brooklyn, which is actually closer to Brooklyn College. So we moved in together, and then out of nowhere, we're like, why don't we get married? And I swear, I think I wanted to marry him to piss off my parents.
This'll get him.
Yeah.
Because, rise out of him.
Because I knew deep down inside they never liked him.
Oh,
now,
they never
like came out and said they don't like him. But I'm sure, I mean, this guy was 5 years older than me. And what was I, like 17 or something like that? And that was a big right. age difference.
So
in
the
those
sound
days.
The sound thinking was, I'm going to marry this guy and I'm going to vow to make a lifetime commitment just to get a rise out of my parents. Okay. Did it work again?
Did subconsciously,
work?
Maybe, but that wasn't like my my thought. But you know, I don't know if I got a rise out of them or not.
Mm.
You know, I do remember part of the wedding. It was awesome. We went up to this like place somewhere, and I forgot the town, but it was like 2.5 hours north of New York City, and we probably had about, I don't know, like 70 people total. And I just remember my friends coming into the room where I was getting married, and they're like handing me, you know, drugs and pills and all this stuff and drinking. And that's why I don't remember much of it.
So at the time, is alcohol becoming a part of your everyday life?
No, I wasn't doing everything every day because I was in school. Well, maybe it was. I don't know.
But you're functioning.
You know, I was functioning because I was going to school. I was doing a lot of those speed things, though, because it was great, you know, dancing. So
God, she dances fast.
Well, if you're a dance major, you're going to school and you're doing a lot of extra hours rehearsing.
A lot of stamina.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. A lot of stamina. And I was probably on the verge of also having an eating disorder, mm-hmm. you know, because I was doing speed.
But that's kind of common in the dance world,
I guess,
too, isn't it?
I guess. And I would have this little bag of, like, nut mix, and that was, like, good for the entire day. And then I would drink coffee and tea all day, you know.
Healthy diet.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So at what point does alcohol become...
keep asking me.
Well,
so,
you know,
so
okay.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, so your whole life is kind of fucked up, but I just want to talk about the alcohol part.
Yeah, okay. So then, you know, I said that he was introducing a lot of things, you know, and the favorite thing that I tried was cocaine.
Mm.
So cocaine and alcohol, I mean, it was always together. So, you know, if we started drinking... We needed to get cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, if we didn't do cocaine without alcohol.
Right. Alcohol was always part of it.
Yeah.
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 I get that.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was great until it wasn't great. We were in Brooklyn there doing that. And then, you know, we moved out to San Diego, and that was very rocky because he went out there first, got a job out there, decided he didn't like New York. So he goes out there, convincing me to move back in with my parents so I could finish my last year of school.
Hmm.
So I'm like, okay, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I'm very, you know, I think maybe I'm too easygoing sometimes with my entire life. You know, somebody like tells me to do something, I'm like, all right.
He's going along.
Yeah, I'm going along with it. So he goes out there. I move back in with my parents. 2 weeks later, I'm on a plane and I'm
out to San Diego.
Enough of that.
Didn't last, huh? You toughed it out for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They were like,
I toughed it out for 2 weeks.
They're like, bye.
Yeah, and I had, you know, just left school, but it was in between semesters.
Okay.
So it wasn't like, you know, that big of a deal.
Did you plan on coming back and finishing?
Not coming back. No, I didn't plan anything.
Oh.
I just went out there.
No plan.
So, you know, I was really, really depressed when I got out there because I had no friends, no family, no job, no school, you know, and I had to make it look like I was a straight-laced person because this person, the husband at the time worked for a very straight-laced family business.
Mm.
It was like a drapery fabric business. And they were really nice and all that, but they weren't, you know, like alcoholics or anything.
Yeah, they weren't going to understand your party lifestyle.
No, no. So I remember going out to dinner with them. And of course, you know, I had a drink before I went out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go out and, you know, everybody's, it was a Mexican restaurant. Everybody's ordering a margarita. So, you know, I'll order a margarita, you know, but everybody's just sipping it and sipping it.
Weirdos.
Drink and that thing. I was just, you know, oh my God, I can't believe this dinner. I got to get out of here. You know,
yeah.
This is bad. You know, so, I mean, but I played the game and that was, you know, I was good at that. I was good at playing the game. So, you know, then one day my husband says to me, we should have a kid. So I'm like, okay, you know,
jeez.
Again,
man, you're really agreeable.
All right. This is what I'm saying. So I went along with that. And then we have a son. And then my ex-husband is like, you know what we have to do? We have to stop doing drugs and drinking because we need to be good parents. And I'm like,
say what?
Well, no.
Oh.
I said, okay.
Sounds good.
But I did not do okay.
Mm.
I went behind his back. And this is where, like, the lying and the cheating and all that stuff came, you know, became apparent. And it was bad. We weren't getting along. You know, I was not being a good mom.
But let me ask you this. So at the time, did you want to stop?
Yeah, I guess.
But
you know,
but you couldn't?
No, I couldn't stop. By this time, I couldn't stop because I was just thinking, you know, how am I going to get loaded, you know, when
cope,
I wake
right?
up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
You start hiding it.
So you got to hide it from him, the kids, and the drapes.
Yeah. I mean.
And the drapery mogul.
I mean, the kid was a baby, so, like, he didn't know anything. But it was very, very hard. And then, you know, I started working in the restaurant business,
which was
horrible.
Yeah, that's a recipe for drugs and alcohol.
See, before the restaurant business, I was like jumping from job to job because, you know, I knew retail. Because after that whole Charge Girl scenario, I actually got like a job at Macy's as an actual person.
The arch rival of Gimbel's?
It was.
I know.
They were right across the street.
Yeah. Look at you.
So I knew retail, okay? But that was stupid because I didn't want to work retail in San Diego. I tried it. I did it full-time, and I had to make believe that I was, like, really into this, you know, the mm-hmm. store and the whole, you know, and I want to go up the ladder.
Seems like a recurring theme.
Yeah.
at this time in your life, though, have there been any consequences from drug and alcohol use, really?
Well,
other than
not
just,
yet, no.
Yeah, other than
not
just
really.
Having this this go-along lifestyle.
Yeah, not really.
Yeah. Do you feel, looking back on it now, like your go-along lifestyle, your just ability to just go with the flow, had anything to do with you wanting to protect your drug and alcohol use and just saying, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I'll get married. I'll have a kid. I'll move out there. I'll blah, 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 blah. Because that's the way
Maybe.
I was.
Maybe. I mean, years ago, I was always like, I never really knew what I wanted to do
mm-hmm.
ever. So I think somebody's suggestion was better than no suggestion,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being like in second grade or third grade and you know how the teacher would go around there, what do you want to be when you grow up? And these people were saying, I want to be a nurse. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a firefighter. And I'd be like, I don't know.
I want to be a drunk.
You know, so I never really had a goal.
Yeah. So you're in San Diego and you're in this position where you're kind of fooling your husband that you're not going to be drinking and using drugs. You got a kid, you get this other job in the restaurant business. Where does it go from there?
Well, then it went downhill because we weren't getting along. I'd be calling up his dad. His dad is very, very important in my sobriety because his dad, way back when we were living in Brooklyn, he was like one of my best friends. He used to work at the hair club for men in Manhattan.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember that guy.
Well, no, he wasn't that guy.
Right, but I remember the guy.
Yeah.
The hair club for men.
Yeah. So the hair club for men. So then on the weekends or whatever at night, he would cut hair in his basement. You know, so I'd go there and get my hair cut and, you know, we'd chit chat. But more importantly, we would go out to lunch a lot. We'd meet in Manhattan, the liquid lunch. Mm. You know, so this guy drank as much as I could.
This guy was a pro.
Yeah. He and, you know, and I think for him, alcohol, it was alcohol. I don't think he was dabbling in drugs or anything.
Right, right.
But I used to, like, be right there with him, you know. So one time when I was in San Diego, I had visited New York. And I was still, you know, like, out there. You know, I visited New York, and I call him up. And I, hey, Milty, you know, I'm on the phone. I'm in New York. When are we going to go out to lunch, you know? And he knew exactly when I met. And he goes, Vic, I don't do that anymore. And I'm like, yeah, right, Milty.
Boys kill.
Yeah, because he was a pro, right?
Yeah. He goes, Vic, I don't do that anymore. Come on, Milty. You know, I thought he was pulling my leg. And then he started telling me that he goes to AA. And I'm like, really? And he was, you know, convincing me more by telling me that some of my ex-husband's friends were in AA as well. You know, he was breaking their anonymity, you know, whatever. But it didn't matter because, you know, I wasn't anywhere near them. But you know, that guy planted the seed for me. So he was in AA, you know, for a few years before I even
Did you think you were having a problem?
I knew I drank a lot.
Yeah, too much?
Probably. But you know, it never dawned on me yet.
Yeah, you thought it was manageable. What's the big deal, right?
Yeah, but you know what? After our marriage broke up, you know, it was tough. I was getting my son, like, on the weekend.
You're still living out in San Diego?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were out in San Diego. I was out in San Diego. They weren't that far from me. So, oh, and the thing is, I moved out, you know. So my ex-husband was raising my kid. Mm. And my thinking was so screwed up at this point. Now it's a problem because I was thinking I just don't have the ability to take care of a child, you know, plus I work at night. And so I think, you know, I mean, we had decent conversations. We went to a moderator to do this whole thing, you know, and I said, you know, maybe you should live with him and then I'll visit with him, you know, and that's how it was. So my ex-husband raised my son, you know, and I could tell you this and, you know, all over cyberspace now, but the people in AA understand this, you know. So, you know, it wasn't until like a few years later even. I think I'm ruining the chronological, you know, exact times of everything.
That's okay, as long as we pick up the, you know, the story and how
But I remember going back to Brooklyn. It might have been the same trip, and my parents were having this, you know, barbecue in the backyard with all the family and some friends and everything. And I kept running upstairs to my old bedroom, you know, because I needed to, like, get loaded.
Yeah.
Kept running up there. And then I think at this point, my parents started to suspect something that, you know, there's something not right. So my parents sent one of their friends in to talk to me. Now, this friend, she was like my second mom. So I was always very close with her. So she comes into this room and she goes, Vicky, your parents think you might be drinking too much. I'm like, no, I'm not.
I'm not drinking enough. What, are you kidding me?
So, I mean, you know, so she left, whatever. And then my parents are driving me to the airport. And I'm in the back seat and they're both in the front seat. And my mother says something like, do you think you have a problem with alcohol? And I'm like, yeah. And they, you know, because at that point I'm like, I don't give a shit anymore. I really don't.
Wow. Yeah.
So I go, yeah. So they were driving me to the airport to go back to San Diego. And they go, oh, my God, we have to get you into rehab and we have to do this. Like, they wanted to control everything now and get me all well. You know, and I'm like, I'm okay. I'll be fine. You know, and the thing was, I wasn't ready yet. That's, you know.
Right, you didn't
even
want
though,
it. They did.
Yeah.
They were trying to parent you.
Yeah.
But you're an adult.
Right.
And you have an alcohol issue, you know, but you're managing it, you think.
Yeah, I think I am.
So, you know, get off my back.
Yeah, because the thing was, I've never been arrested. Mm-hmm. Never lost a job to drinking. I mean, the restaurant business, they loved us drinking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Part of the deal. It really is.
It really is. I know.
So you leave there. You go back to San Diego. What transpires?
So I go back to San Diego. It probably took, a few years, and something came over me. I don't know what it was, but at this point, I didn't know what it was. Now I realize it was my higher power intervening. Because, again, you know, my family didn't believe in God, okay? Hmm. The whole God thing, we used to leave town on the high holy days. In the Jewish religion, there's like Yom Kippur, mm-hmm. where you leave and you have to fast, and then you go to synagogue or whatever. We would leave town and have a picnic at a state park, you know, so the neighbors wouldn't see us.
Right.
So just... It was awesome. But this whole, like, they were really anti-God. It wasn't just...
We're just not non-practicing Jews.
Yeah.
We just don't believe the whole thing.
Right. And I, you know, when I was a little bit older, maybe 14, 15 or so, remember All in the Family?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Mike Stivic.
Yeah.
Mike Stivic was yelling at Archie Bunker. He was an agnostic. Yeah. I question the belief of God, Archie. You know, so then I'm saying, maybe... I'm questioning the belief of God, you know? So that's sort of, you know, that was sort of my philosophy.
There's a chapter for you in the big book.
Yeah.
It's actually my favorite chapter, but.
Me too.
Yeah, love that.
So then, you know, I forgot where I was.
You were considering that you got a message from your higher power saying
this is it, because.
Was there a circumstance? Like, was
It was the fact was that my bank account was almost getting down to nil, okay? I was going to work, and I was spending more than I was making, you know, on whatever. Like, my friends, and I'm doing air quotes here. My friends, I would say, don't let me have any drugs tonight. Okay, so then somebody would slip me something. So once, you know, once you do that, then you got to get more.
And you got to go out and buy another gram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, I had credit with a few people. You know, I wasn't in debt or anything. I was paying back, but I was never on top.
Yeah.
You know?
Things were getting unmanageable.
So, yep, there you go. So aside from, you know, leaving my family, now I had like a dead-end job. I was losing money. You know, I wasn't getting arrested, which is good, but, you know, I was driving drunk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had a car, but it was crappy. I had an apartment, which was crappy.
So you decide you need to make a change. You need to do something.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
So out of nowhere, you know, and I had that AA in my head from my ex-father-in-law.
Right.
So I opened up the yellow page. Maybe it was the white pages.
Yeah, it was the white pages. Yeah.
And again, I have to say that my first meeting was not AA. It was the other A. It was the NA. But it's the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up jumping back and forth in the beginning. And I landed in AA and I stayed in AA. And I'll tell you, it was because the people in AA have better shoes.
Of course, yes. That's our main. That's it, part of the big book. You must wear good shoes. It's a program of attraction, mostly with footwear. Yeah.
But I remember there was a reading in NA, and they always said something like, "Alcohol is a drug. We are people with something with the, you know, we have addiction."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I always like flip that around, and I'm in AA, and my sponsor always said to me, always have respect for the group. So if you're an AA, you're an alcoholic. If you happen to go to NA, you're an addict. So that's how I grew up in the program.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, as long as you have a desire to stop drinking, you're in the right place. Right?
Yeah.
And those things are all just symptoms of what we're really got a problem with.
Yeah.
And what our real issues are, you know.
Yeah.
So
you go to your first meeting. Do you raise your hand and say it's your first meeting?
Probably. I don't remember much except that whoever was leading the meeting had a hat, and I thought that was the requirement for the leader. They had to wear a hat.
So you're really into the whole clothing thing, the shoes, the hat.
It's true.
I know, right? Must be part of your Gimbel's and Macy's.
It could be.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I was always like, I always felt deprived when I was growing up because I had a lot of my older sister's hand-me-downs. My father was always telling us, we don't have any money, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Oh, we had money. We had enough. That was the thing. Yeah. It wasn't like we were in the poorhouse.
So you like the shoes, you like the hat, and you go to a meeting, and does it take hold at all?
Well, I'll tell you, the first meeting that I went to, I heard the word God, and I'm like, big turn. Here we go.
God.
Yeah, here we go. And then, you know, I kept coming back. I called up a good friend of mine who I used to party with, and he was also in the restaurant business. And I go, Rick. Oh, I'm sorry, I said his name, but whatever.
There's a lot of people named Rick.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I go, Rick, I went to an A meeting, and he's like, Vic, I'm so proud of you. Maybe I'll come along. I go, you should totally come with me. So these first meetings, it was a noon in the park meeting, like near my house, and he lived in the neighborhood too. So we would come out there with our beach chairs, you know, and set up, and it was really nice. You know, it was San Diego. So the first few meetings, I gotta say, for, you know, maybe a month or so, we were just like elbowing each other. You think that guy's gay? Because my friend Rick was gay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
But they told me to get a sponsor. So I tried to get a guy sponsor at first because I didn't trust the women.
That's very common.
Yeah, it is very
common. It's very hard for...
So this guy was smart enough where he said, let me introduce you to this woman. Mm-hmm. So she became my first sponsor. And, you know, we worked on the whole God concept where I, you know, it came to me because of the fact that I didn't kill myself, because of the fact I didn't kill anybody else. You know, there was always something protecting me. So, you know, I convinced myself that this is my higher power. It's always been there.
That's, you know? To me, in AA, one of the great things that these people came upon was this God as you understand him.
Correct.
It makes people like us who have been exposed to a religion we didn't like or whatever.
The guy with the beard.
The dogma, whatever it was. We can do our own thing, man. You know, and it's all the same thing, really.
There's
anyways.
Other powers out there.
Yeah, it's all, it's just a spiritual connection. Call it what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
exactly
what made me more comfortable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And me too.
Yeah.
And, you know, after I, you know, I was like okay with this whole thing and I started to, you know, really understand it and believe it, I'm like, okay, this is good. And then, you know, I learned prayers, you know, like the Serenity Prayer. I learned the Lord's Prayer. Somebody wrote it down for me and handed me a little thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other prayers I do, you know, I make up my own prayers.
It's just you talking to your higher power.
Yeah, I'm not, you know.
At this point, are you having any kind of a psychic change or spiritual connection early on in the program?
Well, it's not like, you know, the burning bush thing.
Right, it was a slow grind for you.
Yeah, it was a slow.
You're learning.
Yeah, it definitely. And
so you got the sponsor. Are you working the steps with the sponsor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we're working the steps. We're going through. You know, it's interesting because she never, like, took me one-on-one through the big book. She would give me, like, homework. Uh-huh. Read this. So I got to tell you, you know, this is how many years later, I finally have a sponsor right now who is going through the big book with me one-on-one. I mean, I've gone to big book studies before with groups.
Is there a difference?
Oh, yeah.
That was huge for me.
Yeah. And the other thing is I feel like, you know, like what's my motivation for like this whole thing? And I want to be a better sponsor because I have sponsored women before and I have never taken them through the entire, like they get to, I think the last one got as far as like 4, but never to 5. And she didn't finish 4. And then they leave.
That's right.
You know, so I'm like, well, you know, I am a laid back sponsor. I'm not going to go after you. I will not.
Nope.
That's good. That's healthy for you.
Yeah. But, you know, on the other hand, I'm like, am I being selfish? I don't know. You know,
you can only, you know, believe me, if they wanted to go through more of the big book, they'd be on you about it. Like, can we do chapter 5 now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, for me as a sponsor, I have sponsees that are gung-ho and want to get stuff going. And I have other sponsees that I'm on a step with them for a year.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I'm thinking, I'm like you. I'm like, I'm not going to start hammering them.
Yeah.
If they want to do this, they'll do this.
And that ends up being good for them, too, because we certainly don't want to, as sponsors with our pride and egos, want to create, dependent people either.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you got to own it.
Yeah.
You know? So you go through the steps. How do you end up moving out of San Diego?
So, in San Diego, in those first few weeks where I was like listening but not listening and doing what I wanted still, in the first few weeks before July 19th, I was there at a few meetings before that, and I was really, really patting myself on the back because I wasn't doing any drugs. I wasn't doing any drugs, and I gave up the hard alcohol. So
what were you drinking?
So every now and then I would have a glass of wine or maybe two glasses of wine, but that's it.
Yeah.
And then one day I came home after two glasses of wine. And why am I so depressed? So I call up my sponsor and she's like, have you been drinking? And I go, but I only had two glasses of wine. She goes, Vicky, you have to call me before you drink, mm-hmm. not after. And you can't be drinking.
Right, you can't get sober while you're drinking.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. So, but the other thing I was doing was, remember I was looking at the guys with my friend?
Yeah.
So I see this guy, on the other side of the circle. And, I was taking the suggestion that at every meeting, go get a phone number, right?
So, oh, man.
So I went over to this guy after the meeting. I go, hey, my sponsor said I should get a phone number at every meeting. So he was cute. So I got his phone number. I don't even know. I think he was telling me he doesn't even have a house or something. He gave me someone else's phone number because he was crashing on someone's.
Right. You should have asked him. You should have asked him if you wanted to get a credit card to Gimbel's.
Right.
So yeah.
So we started dating, and I'm air quoting again, dating. There was, nothing serious, but all of a sudden he's living with me like a few weeks later.
All of a sudden he's crashing on your couch and getting out your phone number.
Well, so we were a thing and he was living with me, but I started getting, a little bit like I was having deja vu from the last guy when I was loaded and I let some guy live with me where I was sort of like, supporting him almost in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So my sponsor hands me a book. It's called Codependent No More.
Yeah,
She goes, read this book.
Yeah, this might help you.
So I read the book, and then I go to, this guy that I was now living with. I go, I'm codependent, and I have to ask you to move out. I'm really sorry. So we sort of split for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this guy and me. We both had like 30 days when we first moved in. And then
always a great idea.
I know. So then when he moved out, he must have had a few months. He moved out. And then I'm coming up on my year anniversary in the program. And I was like, oh, I miss him. I love him. Where is he? That kind of thing. Because he was gone. I didn't know where he was. He wasn't showing up at meetings or anything. So I was asking the guys that used to hang out with him. And they're like, oh, I think he went out. I think he was driving a moving truck and went across the country or whatever. Well, a day before my anniversary date, he shows back up in the meeting.
So, your one-year anniversary?
Yep. So then, I cornered him after the meeting. This guy, now he's really fresh because he did go out and relapse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I love you. I miss you. But we have to have boundaries, So that was my thing. So he didn't move back in like immediately, but eventually he did move back in. And this is the guy I've been married to for like 30 years.
Really?
Oh, no,
this is your current husband?
This is my husband.
Wow.
So I got to say, it's tough. And it was tough, and we have a daughter together. So, and that's the reason why, that's the reason why we got married so fast, because I got pregnant and I had no insurance. Mm. And at the time, he was working for a plumbing company and had insurance. So I go, well, maybe we should get married, you know? So we got married. So so I had insurance. That's a horrible reason to get married.
Well,
but
it worked out, right?
It worked.
It worked out.
And, you know, I mean, I really don't recommend the way we did it because it's been tough. I mean, we've been to counseling and, you know, and we have different ideologies as far as like higher power versus Jesus. And he stopped going to meetings. He doesn't drink or anything, but he's very into church.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's fine. But, you know, there's some difficulty in that realm sometimes.
Well, you've got two humans living together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So your chances are less than 50%
there. When we don't recognize that, it's really bad, though.
Yeah.
Right? And that's
where
we start running their lives and all that stuff, and the codependency comes back. So, you know.
Yeah. And we were raising a daughter together, and we didn't have a manual on how to raise a daughter. And so, you know, that's a strained relationship now, you know, and this is totally in recovery.
Right. You know? The whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, you know, if you're sober, you still need help.
There's still life. Oh, God, yes. Just because you put the drink down, it doesn't mean life stops.
I know.
In fact, it's a little more raw because you don't have that anesthesia anymore.
Exactly.
So you got to start working on yourself and working on your life and your decisions and your thinking and your behaviors. And, you know, that's what the program's really all about, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the good thing is that I'm a grandma now, and my grandson is across the country. But I've got a relationship with my son now better than I ever had, I think, because I'm, you know, talking to him more often and I get to see this baby on FaceTime, you know. So my daughter's relationship is not great, but, you know, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Things can always improve as long as you stay sober.
Yeah. And I pray. You know, I pray for her that she's happy. I suspect that, you know, she's got a little of this, I don't know, whatever, like depression or, you know.
Everybody's got issues.
Everybody has issues. So, you know, it's tough. But, you know, but my life today, it's, you know, so how we got here? He was working out in San Diego, but he grew up out here.
Oh, okay. He grew up in New York.
Yeah. He grew up like in Mattydale area, North Syracuse. So he was hounding at me going, I really want to move back here. And I'm like, why? Because I had visited here. You know,
you're like, nah. It's
with
no
the cows and stuff? And
No, and it wasn't. It wasn't so much the cows. It was like the gray and the, you know, just the
80 sunny days we get per year.
Yeah,
that's
just
it.
the non, like, urban kind of a
city. You used to New York City, you used to San Diego.
Yeah.
You moved to a smaller city.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, for 3 years, he was nagging me. And I tell him this. He goes, I wasn't nagging. This was your decision to come. I'm like, you were nagging me for 3 years. I couldn't take it anymore. Again, I said, All right already.
All right. Yeah.
You know, when we got out here, though, oh my God, I thought it was the worst decision I ever made. But, you know, after a while, I made it work.
Yeah, we have good sobriety out here.
Yeah, there is good sobriety out
there
here.
There is, yeah.
I mean, San Diego had good sobriety, too.
Right. I think wherever you go, you're going to find good sobriety if you want to.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's great because I get to travel, and wherever I go, you know, if I can, I seek out a meeting.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Like, we were in Ireland last year, and I went to two meetings there.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I know.
It's a different life now.
It is a different life.
Well, we're kind of winding down here on our time.
And I've had so much fun.
Thank you for telling the story. And I want to thank you for bankrupting Gimbel's.
Oh, yeah.
And Macy's is kind of on its way out now. So
that's true.
Put that
and for not climbing the drapes.
Yes. So until next time, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
I'm Vicki.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glumlot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glumlot community.